Welcome to Insider's Guide to the Other Side, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hi, y'all. I'm Julie.
Hi there. I'm Brenda. Welcome to Insider's Guide to the Other Side.
Now, y'all need to know that we're obsessed with everything on the other side.
Yes, we are. Because once you learn to navigate the energetic, or to some, the invisible world, life is going to be more fun and much more serene.
Heck yes, it can. Because let's be honest, Bryn, Earth School is hard. In fact, you taught me that.
Let's crush Earth School together.
Hello, my witchy poo. How are you?
Bravo. I feel like I had a performance there. That was awesome. Hello, my elf. How are you?
Next time I'll try to do I'll do a rap or something. Witchy poo. I got to practice that though. I'm great. Thank you for asking.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. It's like our first day of a little reprieve from the pounding sun that has been so incredibly
you've been in the heat.
Abusive. Yes. Yes. So we have a little break today. So I'm very excited about that because I will be going to the warehouse after this. I feel like I say that in a lot of shows. I'm going to the warehouse after this.
Thank you for ordering people.
Yeah, oh my gosh, it's so exciting. I couldn't be happier.
Thank you for expanding the rock love on the planet. Yay.
Couldn't be happier. Really couldn't be happier. I'm so excited. But we don't have an air conditioner yet. That should be coming in very soon. So yeah, I have to wait for days like this to do all the literally heavy lifting. So I'm pretty excited because the weather's good for me to do that. So today, our episode is called Price Tag. And no, we do.
Cha-ching.
Well, we actually do not have Jesse J as a guest. And I know Brenda doesn't know what that means.
I didn't
think you did.
Judge away, people. Don't care.
Okay. Well, for those that know, Jesse J sings the song Price Tag. And so I want to call it Price Tag. But it is actually very fitting because we've been talking, since really the beginning of the show about different acts that can pay a big price. In fact, I remember, Brenda, early on in one of our early shows, we were kind of doing a Q&A with each other. And I remember saying, can I go kick Hitler's ass on the other side? And you're like, well, do you remember that? It was something ridiculous that I said. It's hard to keep up with all the ridiculousness, but that was one of them.
It's awesome.
And I remember you saying, you're like, well, do you really want to pay that price? Right? Do you want to pay? So we've been talking about price tags.
Can you? Yes. Should you?
No. Yeah. Could you? Yes. Should you? No. Exactly. And it feels like we both have been having this conversation about how high a price is for something lately. So it felt something that we should really talk about. You've been experiencing that too, right?
Yeah. It's been coming up a lot where, there's just some extra stress on the planet right now for all kinds of reasons, but it is that the level of frustration that people are experiencing, and a lot of people are just acting out, but some people have the ability to discern, I'm just so annoyed, I really want to do this, can I get away with it?
Right.
That cost is going to be, what's that phrase? You're writing checks your body can't cash.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right, or your soul can't cash. Yeah.
Right. And I've been weirdly
going into karmic debt.
Yeah. No, but I've been having some of the same conversations. We talked about, a number of weeks back about kind of in this, we're really not in a post-COVID world, but people are getting out into the world again. And that's all the behaviors that people are having, whether you're punching a flight attendant or you're saying something shitty to someone or you literally shooting someone. This is pretty extreme about what's been going on. And so we dedicated a show to that most recently. And I believe that so much of it too is that, we are a world, we're not even a nation. We are a species that is and grieving.
4 million people, right? Just from COVID. A whole bunch of other people passed, for all kinds of reasons, but just from COVID,
right.
4 million people gone.
Right. So there's a lot of grieving that is going on. Yeah. And so I think that's why we've been having these conversations. But I wanted to kind of turn this whole idea of a price attached to something for an action that you want to have or have had. And I want to flip it to, what is the price of inaction? Right? New or school
That's
lesson.
Great yogis flip things, right? It's the tantrica way. Let's flip it the other way and take another look. Right?
Yeah.
So you're such a good yogi.
I've never been told that. I've been told I was a little bit of a Yoda once, but not a yogi. Do you know who Yoda is, right?
Well, yeah,
okay, I'm just checking. Hey, a girl's got to check. An elf's got to check. You had not heard about Jessie J and her song Price Tag, which I would sing, but I will not. I
didn't even know Jessie was a girl.
Yeah, Jessie J is a woman. And by the way, okay. Hot. Just PS for all the other lesbians out there. Just freaking dynamite. So Suzanne's not listening. I don't think she cares. She probably thinks she's hot too. But so this whole idea of, you know, flipping, like it's a both sides of a coin, right? There's the coin of inaction, yep. of inaction side of it, and there's the coin of action. Either way, that coin is a price.
Right.
So nice. I thought that I would do a nerdy elf move.
I love nerdy elf.
I would do a nerdy elf move. And by the way, other people like nerdy elf because they will write us notes on our store and say, "Dear nerdy elf," like it happens more frequently than you would think.
They do it on Instagram too.
But I'm gonna, pull.
Or they'll be like, "I was nerdy elf today."
It's so funny. I love that. That's so fun. I love that. But this is nerdy elf and full on here because I would like to tell y'all a story about inaction, but it's not really only from the spiritual sense. Like it actually turned into something much bigger. So it's actually had turned into a earthly law. So without further ado, I will tell a quick story about a woman named Kitty Genovese, G-E-N-O-V-E-S-E. How do you pronounce, perfect. How do you pronounce that?
Yeah.
Genovese?
Yeah.
Let's just call her Kitty.
Kitty.
So
Kitty G.
Kitty G. Oh my God. Don't she plays the sax. So so bad. I have like.
That was so
it's
bad.
So bad. I need a little reference. So the story of Kitty is about a woman, which is her, who was raped and murdered on the streets of New York City in the late 19th. And this event, interestingly enough, was the event that triggered a law that is still on the books to this day, and it's called the Bystanders Law. And it also was a creation of 9/11, right? Bystander, because you stand around to let something happen, you are complicit,
right?
Which is the whole idea of when we don't say anything. When something is happening, right? Like if somebody's making a comment, which we will get into, you are also complicit. And I think that's the moral of the story you're getting now. So you can enjoy the story as we go. But so while Kitty was being savaged by a stranger, because the man who raped and killed her was a stranger, up to 28 other strangers either watched or heard Kitty's cries for help.
Oh my God.
And never reported the incident. The New York Times actually first reported on the excessive number of people who did absolutely nothing that night. The report, interestingly enough, was disputed over the years, and some saying there were less than 28, some saying there was upwards 38, whatever the number is. But it's interesting because it was the New York Times actually back then had to issue an apology because they did not get the information correct, just as a little side note to it. But all of these facts that you can read about the story of Kitty, there's one that's really important that's missing. And one really important note of this is missing is that Kitty was a single woman living in New York City, as I mentioned before. But she had a lesbian lover that lived with her. Name was Marianne. And I believe Marianne is still alive. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And imagine what this must have been like for Marianne, right? It's like you can't in the 50s. Be gay,
no.
Right?
No.
Not okay. No. Okay. And the suffering that she had to...
In silence.
Right? Yeah. I mean, just it's unbearable, just the thought of it for me. But this man that had actually raped her first and stabbed her a few times, Kitty actually started to crawl up the stairs to get home. Right?
Oh my God. I mean...
Assisting. Yeah.
Nobody assisting
because... The attack lasted about 30 minutes. She was stabbed 14 times. And then, of course, you know, through this is where, you know, the New York Times was misreporting. But the man's name who killed her was, his last name was Mosley. And what's really interesting about Mosley is that he just, like, within the last few years, he recently jumped. Which I think...
Clearly not soon enough.
Well, it's fascinating, though, because if you think about it, it's like...
Yeah.
I mean, he literally had to pay his price. right? For what he did. I mean, this isn't even the bystanders, right? Like, he literally had to pay his price.
Did he go to jail?
He did go to jail. Yes, he did.
He did?
Yes, he did. It's interesting, the if you hear paper shufflings, because I have a shit ton on my desk right now.
Because I'm nerdy elf.
but Kitty, her name was Catherine, but Kitty was 28 when she was murdered. The headline in the New York Times was 37 who saw murder didn't call the police. So the really good news, because you would like to have some good news coming out of such a tragic event. The good news is that started 911. So what's really interesting about this is, I mean, the headline about, you know, all of these bystanders. But when these bystanders were questioned, they just thought it was like a drunken quarrel or a domestic dispute.
Like, either, that makes it okay, right?
To them, right? Yeah. It definitely made it okay. And if we have time, I actually pulled the research on the bystander effect. Like, why? It's really interesting. It's like, you know, why do some bystanders say something and why that some don't? And it's really two things, I think, if I can summarize this properly. So I'll go ahead and do it right now, is when somebody doesn't respond, you know, when they're a bystander, it's because there's either they don't recognize, like they don't have empathy for that person. So that person has to kind of remind them of either themselves or someone they know. Or they think that there is a risk to themselves, like if somebody has a weapon or something like that. Like that, there's way more to it. And I would encourage people, if you're interested, to read about the bystander effect, because it is quite interesting. But it really, it hit home for me recently with an event that had taken place. And I think before we get into that story, we should probably take a break.
I think that's a genius idea. So don't be a bystander. Come on back. We'll be right back.
Hilarious.
Welcome back. So, my nerdy elf, continue this fascinating story and help us be better human beings.
Yeah, it's, you know, right? It is very Earth School, right? It is about understanding the price we pay for our actions and the price that we pay for our inactions. And, you know,
and that empathy, that empathetic qualification is so critical. It's so critical, right? To see yourself in another human being and another human being in yourself.
Right.
Like, this is essential.
And it is essential.
After 14 months of isolation, right? Quarantine, like, that's really hard. We're out of practice.
We are out of practice. And I will say just very quickly, you know, I was trained by one of the great marketers we've talked about Tony in the past, mm-hmm. Tony Sella. And one of the things that he taught me was, he said, you know, I don't make marketing for me, for things that I like. He goes, we would probably never open a movie if I made the things that I like. He goes, I make things for everybody else. So I learned that to look outward and to try to understand everyone else's points of view, positions on things, and not just my own. And I think that's why I really wanted to talk about this, is that I feel like I have a little bit of a head start because of guys like Tony. But I want to share a story, and I think it's a very powerful story. And I have to leave names out of this one. So you got to keep me, like,
not a problem.
Like,
not a
buzz problem. Me. Go, eh, okay. If you hear me, like, getting too close to what had happened, okay. Because there's people I love are involved in this. But so said people that I love, I was asked me to take him to the airport. And so I was on an airport run. And on this airport run,
which is a big commitment from where you live.
Yeah, anybody, by the way, taking some of the airport, like, is it? It's that's love.
Yeah.
So we're in this airport run, and there was somebody in the car that was being needed to go to the airport with them, who I did not know.
Okay.
And
should we call this person Sally?
Let's call this person Sally. That's perfect. Yeah. So Sally is in the back seat of the car. I'm in the passenger seat. Somebody else was driving because it wasn't my car. I was taking it back to their house. But so as we're approaching the terminal at the airport, there was this really lovely, rather large Hispanic family that was crossing the street. And from the back seat, from Sally, I hear, and like, I'm like hesitating to even say it because it's so incredibly offensive. So if you swerve over, you can hit the spics.
Ooh.
Right? I'm just like, I want to vomit saying that. It's coming out of my mouth. I just want to vomit.
I'm so sorry. So unacceptable.
So your elf whipped her head around.
No doubt.
And said, you're a racist. We don't talk like that. Nor do we think like that. That is not okay. And I'm, of course, like, I get on my soapbox and start saying how their lives are just as important as anybody else's life. Shame on you, like the whole thing. And what people do when that happens is they dig their heels in, right? Which, by the way, throughout this whole thing, that's a lesson, folks. If you happen to say something stupid like that, do not dig your heels in when you're busted. Because it's just making you more of an asshole.
If that's possible.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, it is, because then this Sally says, oh, well, it's just a joke that we have at the hospital.
Ooh.
So this one's a nurse.
The place of healing.
And yes, I said, you just made that 1,000 times worse by saying that. I'm like, I don't even know how many shame on you that I can actually say right now. And I mean, I was literally losing my mind.
I bet you were shaking. You so mad.
Yeah, yes, it was like, I mean, my head popped off. I was angry for days after that, because how could that be? And then proceeds to say, right, digging heels and more, Sally's husband, well, you should hear what her husband's name is, you know, what he says, da 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 da. And I said, you are just digging a deeper and deeper hole. It is so deep, I can't even see you. And we're at the airport, right? So I am furious. Don't even acknowledge this person's existence. And by the way, this person's husband is dying of cancer. He has like stage 4 something rather cancer. I don't know which organ it is specifically. And I just was like, how could you devalue a whole group, millions of people on the planet, devalue them and expect anybody to value what you're going through? Right? Like, that's part of what this is, right? The part of the price is when you devalue someone else, you automatically are devalued yourself.
Right. Yeah. Without a doubt. I'm so sorry.
Right?
I'm so sorry. That's just awful.
And I saw that person again and tried to speak to me. And I put my hand up and I'm like, you don't count anymore. How else do you teach? Because here's one thing that I've learned so much shit in this lifetime. This is like earth school overload for me, and repeating classes and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things, and I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the show, but one of the really interesting things when we had the movie The Book Thief, you remember, I launched that campaign with the 2 blank pages in the New York Times. At the very bottom, it said "Worlds Are Alive," because I wanted people to imagine what a world would be without words. And the only way you can get people to understand that if you take it away. And in this case, it was the same principle of, you need to understand how you devalue someone, because I'm now going to devalue you. So you know what it feels like and that energy that you're putting out there. I'm like, listen to me. I'm angry talking about it. Like, this is like angry elf.
I can hear it. And it's really upsetting. It's really upsetting.
Yeah. So the price... Yeah. is quite great for this. The price is great, whether it is you're going to get paid from another human like me, because I will certainly serve your shit back to you. So everybody listening who knows me, be very wary. If you are racist, do not show it in front of me, or any ist. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be, it's race. Yeah. It's like, if, because, you know,
separation.
We need to say, because it's, the reality is, and I remember Patricia, who we have had on the show before, said to me one time, she goes, I believe that people have a choice. One, either no one is special. The second option is either everyone is special.
Yep. Nothing in between. Yep.
And so I believe that. I live by that. So whether it's a woman, whether it's even a child, I'm not better than a child. In fact, odds are they're better than me, because they're more evolved. Whether it's a gender, a race, it doesn't matter, a color of a skin, a religious belief, a cultural difference, somebody who eats a lot of carbs, because I do judge them sometimes. But anyway, you were going to say something.
Well, I was just wondering, do you think she understood what you were doing?
No. I don't.
Because I would the only thing I could think of to say to her is, you know, I thought a lot about our last encounter, and I wondered if you had.
That's a really good one. In these situations, if it were somebody who were in my world, I would have circled back. But I knew, right? This is that knowing, that intuition, that empathy, that whatever you want to call it, that at that moment, I knew that if I didn't, could I have handled it better? Probably. I can handle everything better, right? Well, I mean, get that.
In any given moment. But right. This is the thing. Like, I mean, watching, I would have known exactly what you were doing.
Yeah.
I don't think she did.
No, I don't think she did
either.
She
doesn't have any awareness, right?
No.
Obviously. Very, very little awareness.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I knew that if I didn't say anything, because here's the thing, when you talk about the bystander law, I'm going to bring it back to the bystander law.
Yes.
And you go back to the psychology of being a bystander. One of the reasons people don't do something is that they're afraid they have something to lose. And so in this scenario that I just described to everyone, it really doesn't matter who it was. It's just the situation, the story is what matters, is what I had to lose is that I had people in that car that I actually did love.
Mm.
Right? And this person who said this thing did not belong to me. So I did have a risk.
Yeah.
I had a risk of being like...
Of alienating.
How dare you say that mm-hmm. to someone? How, whatever, by P.S. none of that happened. But I did have a risk. But I will tell you, the price I would have had to have paid if I were silent was far greater than what I would have potentially had to have paid by saying something.
We've all had that burn.
Yes.
I didn't do anything. I didn't stand up for that person in the meeting, in the line, in the whatever it was. You know, it can be in our own family. It can be at work. It can be in our social tribe. Like whatever, when you don't stand up for what you know is right, it's like you just feel it taking your energy.
Yes.
Sometimes for years.
Right.
Sometimes for years. And even if you don't say the exact right thing, because you can always think of something better to say, you know, 20 minutes, 20 days later, whatever. But at least you said something.
I was pretty good with what I said, though. So don't get me wrong. Yeah. I don't regret it.
I wasn't talking to you.
But I'm just letting you know, like, I felt really good about that because I'm so clear on my, because this is a moral compass thing.
Yeah.
This is a moral compass. And in my moral compass, it's very interesting. I didn't even plan in my head to even talk about this, but you know, we all should be very clear about what our moral compass is and where our true north is pointed mm-hmm. and what that means. And people have different things. Like I know, you know, people, you know, and I'll just say mine instead of saying what other people do. In mine, part of a big chunk of what my moral compass represents is this idea that we are all the same.
Right.
And I used to look at my moral compass as I would prioritize. I would be like, I'm a woman first, then I'm gay, like this, and it's listing things, right? And then I've changed that because that was stupid. I mean, because at the end of it was always the color of my skin, right? Okay. But like I went through this whole list and like being white was like, whatever. It's like, that's so not an important thing to me. Being from the country of origin, don't really care because that's not who I was. But it's all now changed to mm-hmm. we're all equal. And when you're all equal, you must stand up for all.
Right.
When someone's being, you know, shame. And by the way, those people didn't hear her, but that's not the point. The point is the energy was out there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing is about being non-judgmental is another thing on my compass, even though I was kind of judging this woman. But it's more about a practice of non-judgmental than it is an absolute.
Well, it's judging in a way that says I have to be true to myself here, right? If for me not to say something and, you know, let her know that's not okay. We don't talk like that. We don't think like that, right? And a bit of a teaching moment, I would say.
Yeah.
Right.
But those people that don't, and when you talked about just a few minutes ago, when people like it'll sit with them for days, weeks, years, whatever it may be, that's the karma.
Well, that's the price, right?
That's the price.
When, you know, I shut down my healing practice with COVID, but, you know, I would put my hands on people and go, what is this? You know, that feels like this. Oh, 20 years ago, blah, 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 blah. Someone said this to me and I, you know, like I froze or I didn't say anything. Like they hold it in their bodies and it is not helpful. It is not helpful. So being able to speak your truth, and you know, people have different ways of doing it. So one of the, you know, Athena sisters and in my goddess program, Athena's Magical Secrets, is Southern. She was very Southern. And she was sharing with us. Well, you know,
does she talk Southern. Like this?
She does. She does.
She's got I this love it.
Sweet little drawl. And she's like, well, you know, I was very Southern. Like, yeah, tell us more. You know. And so I know how to say, she goes, so like, I might not like your shoes. I may not like your bag, but I, you know, I can tell you, you know, or I get, well, how'd she say it? I can tell you I like your shoes and I like your bag, which really means I hate your hair. You know?
That's funny.
Like, I'm just saying, and it was, you know, she just was being playful when she said this, but it really spoke such amazing truth, because we do have ways of showing our discontent or showing something that is unacceptable that speaks through our culture. And I just thought it was, you know, she's a steel magnolia, right? She knows how to do that. She knows
my all time favorite movie, by the way. All time. Yes,
so good, right? So good. Just such a
here
classic.
Hit Weezer. I mean, seriously. Yeah. Or so Truvies, it's a chain. As good as maybe
ours. But there are ways for you to stand up, speak your truth, and still hold your position in your community. And we encourage you to find it so that you don't have that extra price tag with interest. Okay.
Right. So with that, because it does, right? Yeah, compounding.
We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. And welcome back from our break of, you know, doling our lives with lower price tags on our karmic inaction.
Seriously, right?
Yeah.
So it is. And I want to give a head nod to all the ladies. We love you guys too. But this one is, I think, particularly important when we talk about why a lot of women don't speak up. Why they don't say something when they know they should. And I will tell very quickly, my cousin's wife, they live in Cincinnati. They are almost your neighbor, Bryn. And they were and Susan was telling me this story when she and Rick were looking for a new house. And the woman, I don't know who it was, the realtor, it doesn't matter, made some comment about how the neighborhood was going down, blah, 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 because she blamed Black people is what she did. My cousin told me 20 minutes of what she wanted to say to this woman, but didn't. Right? And to give folks a little explanation of the didn't.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, so this is all fifth chakra work, right? So that your inside story matches your outside story, right? This is when the words and pictures match, because we've all been in that situation where we've looked around the room or the group, but like, is anyone going to say anything? Like, is anyone stepping out on this? Because it doesn't feel safe to say something, but it doesn't feel okay not to say something, and what to do. And so you're in this, you know, quandary of what to do. It's really hard and it's really threatening. But I do want to say that, you know, we are hardwired to belong. We are hardwired to live in community, to be a part of a tribe for survival. That's hardwiring in our biology. Our biology doesn't change as fast as our physical environment, right? So now we are not outside in the elements unless we choose to be, usually, you know, not for everybody, but for most people. And, you know, so we still have this hard wiring of we have to be, you know, the tall poppy syndrome. We don't want to stand out. We don't want to be at risk, because then we will physically be at risk if we're on the outside of the tribe. So it didn't feel safe. And it hasn't been that long where women could earn their own money and could own land and could vote and all, you know, all these things.
Women couldn't have a credit card without their husband signing off on it until the 70s.
In the 70s, right?
Like 70s, folks. Yeah. In the 1970s, women could not get a credit card on their own.
Can you imagine? And anyhow, it's just crazy because, you know, the women were paying the bills back home anyhow. You know, like, come on. Here nor there. So there are reasons we are not generationally as practiced as men of standing up and leading in this way. Now, that doesn't mean we're not able to. But sometimes we are not raised to, right? And so not everyone is that activated Black Panther who says, hey, you know.
Or is confrontational. But yeah. There is that saying, right? It's like, I mean, there was so long, it's like women were to be seen and not heard.
Yeah, which they used to say about children too, right? Yeah. Because right. Women seen literally used to be white women and children. You said, like, wait, what? How did that happen? That doesn't...
Right.
But it's, and when I can't think of the young woman's name who filmed George Floyd's death.
Oh, I can't think of her name, but I know who exactly you're talking about.
I mean, she's just this outstanding human being who is plagued by not doing enough, right? Mm-hmm. She changed the consciousness on the planet, and she is plagued that she didn't do enough because she had, in the face of trauma and horror, had the presence of mind to pull out her phone and hit record. God bless her. I can't think of her name. But, you know, just, right, she spoke volumes to millions and billions of people. It was amazing. And that's brave. Right?
Yes, it is.
In that moment, that was a terrifying thing to do. And I bet she doesn't even know about the bystander law, right? I mean, so we have to, when
but
we
she
are
doesn't.
In touch with who we are and what we know to be true and right for us, we don't think and put it through too many filters. We obviously put it through filters, but we don't have to go through so many to get approval from the outside to do what we know is true and right. Super important.
Yeah, and when, you know, you're faced with these situations, again, no one is required to handle them as I do, because I handle things sometimes like a bull in a china shop, and I know that's also who I am. I'm okay with that, and yeah. I'm okay with the being kicked out of a tribe. It's a weird thing for me, but I'm okay with that.
Well, you also do it to be of service.
I do very much to be of service.
Yeah, you're going to think about this differently. You're going to think about saying this out loud. Right? With around people you don't know. Right? And if you edit your speech just because of me once, it will have been worth it.
Right. Exactly right. Exactly right. But there are other ways, right? There are other ways to say things. So if you encounter something like that, like my cousin's wife, you know, she could have said, you know, that sounds a bit racist to me, and you don't need to talk like that in front of me. You know, because if enough people, right, like at least if we could get enough of the light, letting the dark know that their antics are not okay, that you actually can benefit from recency theory, which is if you tell somebody something three times, they might actually finally get it.
Right.
And so if they hear something over and over, they might, maybe if we're lucky, do some introspection and start to understand that they're an asshole. So, there's the judgment thing again, or at least the name calling.
I want to tell a quick story. It just reminded me of this. When I was in grad school, my boyfriend, who was this lovely man who happened to be like 6'5", 6'7", something like that. And so we called him Mikey, right? Because it was funny to call this really tall guy Mikey. And Mikey was like, hey, can we go to church? Yeah, like, sure, we can go to church. And so we went to church. It was around Easter. It was during Lent. And the minister said something in the sermon about, it's spring and the women are wearing pastels and the men that you're, you know, a little concerned about wear pastels too. And, you know, he thought he was making a joke. And then afterwards, whatever, you know, I don't even remember a thing about the rest of the sermon, but afterwards there's a sort of a receiving line after church, right? And we're outside. And I said to him, I said, you know, it was a nice sermon, except for this one thing, which I found so surprising that you would say that, especially on a university campus. I mean, it's not acceptable ever, but, you know, to say such an exclusionary, judgmental, uninviting comment from the pulpit, like that seems really harsh. And so Mikey's just like, oh my God, Bren, can you just stop? And I was like, no,
I can't stop.
Can't stop.
No, and let me tell you, the churches, boy, they hate the gays. Oh. So many of
them
do. Not all of them.
I mean, back in the day. This is a while.
Are you kidding? Yeah. It's worse now.
Well, that's true.
Way worse now.
It can be. Yeah.
Oh, it's really bad. So no, they hate my people.
And, you know, we didn't go to that church very often, as you can imagine. But when we did go back to another session, the minister saw me and said, it's so nice to see you back. I've thought about you a lot.
Oh, see, that counts.
And it did. And it had to be at least six months in between those sessions. So chances are I wasn't the first one to say something. I'm hoping I wasn't.
Or you were just the one that made the impression.
Yeah, but I'm hoping I was last, right? So anyhow, it can make a difference, is my point.
Yes, it can. And you did it much more gentle. So like your story, my story is harsh and like weapons. I pull out weapons and they're my words and they're my face. And they're like, it's Margaret. Because my mother used to scare the shit out of people. She did. And I have that. And it's very powerful, actually.
Yeah.
And but not everybody does. And you don't have to, like, handle this if you agree. Raise your hand if you agree. I'm raising my hand with what we're saying about the price you pay for an action. Handle it your way. Do it your way. Do it the way that you can live with. That is you. And if you're a really kind person, you can handle things with so much kindness to deal with it. If it's somebody who's a blockhead, use my way.
And remember, it's the price you're negotiating for your inaction, right? So you get to negotiate with yourself.
You do. And don't, right? and as you, this happens, guys, don't forget about Kitty. Yeah. You know, I mean, Kitty lost her life and her love and the people that stood around and didn't do a damn thing. Even if it was one person, it doesn't matter if it was 28 or 38, if it was one. No. It's like, think about Kitty and what was lost for her.
And I guarantee on some level, those people who didn't do anything paid a price, whether it was sleepless nights or, you know, bodies that were, you know, full of disharmony and discomfort.
They had to have.
Yeah.
They had to have. I actually wrote a list of questions like about what people, what must they have dealt with? And I'm just going to run through them because we have a minute.
You know there was trauma. You know there was trauma.
Right. It's like, you know, I wrote, what happens when we dismiss or devalue the life of another? Was Kitty's life devalued by those who suspected she was gay? And then here's the other thing. And if it was because of that, one of those bystanders are probably going to get a gay kid, for the record. I mean, no, seriously, like that's what happens.
That's what happens.
You know, and how do they carry their guilt? Who seeks forgiveness? Who seeks redemption? And you know, and how many redeem themselves later in life in the name of Kitty. You know, it's like all of those things. But in this, the thing is, if you think about it this way, it was a moment. It was more than a moment. This man raped and stabbed her for a half an hour. So it's vicious. But that time, whether somebody heard from the very beginning or they heard something later, it's still a small moment in the span of someone's life. And when you're in those moments, to make those decisions, to do what is the right thing, right?
And I got to hand it to those lawmakers, right? Because her legacy, what karma or dharma she created with the help of these lawmakers who created the bystander law. Which is a huge standard for the nation. I mean, this is deeply impactful, generationally impactful.
And I think it's also really interesting. Here's the funny thing. Think about, because I spent way too much time thinking about this story. Think about it's what nerds do.
My sensitive nerdy elf.
I know, so sensitive and also so like a fighter. It's like so contradictory in so many ways. I can't stop thinking about the New York Times journalist, right? So that journalist, that writer, that reporter actually got it wrong. Forced the paper that had to do that. But I wonder if they would have actually gotten it right if the law would have ever happened. Like, it's a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
You know, like just you think about the karma, the price, the twist that can happen in something like this is that if that reporter had not written that headline, if that reporter had not gotten the number wrong or done probably that, would this have ever happened? And from there, whatever was driving them to do that very well, I believe, contributed to the fact that we now have a bystander law and we now have 911. So be your own 911, folks.
Yep.
Right? Be your own 911. You hear this stuff and you just call them out versus calling them, you call it out. Be your own 911.
Pay it forward.
Yes, right. That's right.
And remember, our school is hard.
Holy crap, right? Without the bystander law, 911, Kitty, and the other side.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. And a special thanks to our producer, Maya Cole, who guides us while we guide you.
Hit us up on Instagram at OtherSideGuides. Or shoot us a note at othersideguides@iheartradio.com. And you can even call us at 833-22-GUIDE to leave us a message.
We want to know what you think. We want to know what you know. And we want to hear your stories.
And remember,
Earth School is hard
without the other side.
Insider's Guide to the Other Side is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.